connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the
computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Galen had woken up and wondered where all of his roommates had gone. They seemed to have vanished completely. He decided to go to the kitchen to make himself a snack, and also see where his roommates were. When he went down the hallway, he came to a set of two doors. The kitchen was through the door on his left, and so he decided to go through the door on his left.
Well, seeing as this is an audio format and we record in mono, I guess that I will have to express audibly that I am going to go through the door on the right.
The door to the right went to the basement, which was not any sort of food. Galen went to the basement temporarily, but soon realized there was nothing down there and decided to go back upstairs to the kitchen.
I click on the cockroaches that are in the basement.
There are plenty of cockroaches in the basement. Wait, why would you click on cockroaches? They're just insects. Wouldn't it be much more fun to click on waffles? Perhaps sausages? Sausage patties? Waffles and sausage patties to make a waffle sausage sandwich? Not a cockroach sandwich. Galen decided that the cockroach sandwich was not interesting and decided to go upstairs.
I manipulate the cockroaches like in Skyrim to stack them one on top of each other as best I can.
Alright, you want a cockroach sandwich? You can eat a cockroach sandwich, see what I care. And that's...
I eat the cockroach sandwich.
And that is what we're talking about today. Cockroach Sandwich Land.
Yes, indeed. Hello. I know it's a little non-standard, but my name is Galen.
And I'm Matt, and this is NetSurfer Pro, a worldwide... Yeah, no, sorry, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. And, yeah, it is a bit non-standard, but that is because we're talking about something a bit non-standard. Or is it really hyper-standard? I don't know.
It's meta.
It's very, very meta.
I think that's what we can
say. Yeah, we are talking about the Stanley Parable. It is a video game.
Indeed. So the Stanley Parable is, for a quick intro, probably one of my favorite games of all time.
It's very good.
A little bit of backstory. The Stanley Parable was originally a Half-Life 2 mod, or just a source mod, made in 2011 by Davey Reden, W-R-E-D-E-N. And the general idea of it was Reden was interrogating himself on game design and had the thought of what happens when the narrator says something that the player did before the player didn't. And so he created the mod basically to interrogate that question, to ask what happens when the narrator of a game is saying something, but then the player has the ability to completely subvert what the narrator was saying. Then in 2013, or obviously before 2013, they expanded the idea into a standalone game. The co-creator William Pugh, I believe is his name, P-U-G-H, genuinely don't know how to pronounce his last name. He came on board as kind of a co-creator and designer for the 2013 remake. The narrator is Kevin Brighting for both of them. And the remake is basically just an expanded and better version of a mod. There's really... There, besides the fact that it is basically free, as I think that every person with a pulse and many who don't have a pulse anymore own Half-Life 2 in some capacity.
Half-Life 2 is also extremely cheap.
Yeah, and also extremely good, but a different kind of good.
Yeah.
But the mod is still available. You can find it online, but the full remake is just a better expanded version of it. And the remake is what we are going to be focusing on. I don't have a whole lot about, like, what's strictly different from the remake to the new game. But the, I think that before we go any further, more than possibly any other episode, this is very much a case of, if you have never experienced this before, pause now and experience it.
Right. You can play through the game pretty quickly, and then you can also replay through the game pretty quickly, and then also replay through the game very quickly.
Yeah. It's a game that has multiple endings. It's a game that is basically just walking and clicking on things. And it is something that we're about to talk as if you have already played the game, with only very minimal explanations. So, like, if you have not played the game or do not at least know what the game is about, have not seen a playthrough of it, please go experience it for yourself. It is completely amazing.
Right. It's also something where you should try and play it without spoilers at least a few times.
Yeah.
There are some things that I think are hard to find without spoilers, but oh, yeah, most absolutely. Of the game is about experimenting with what you see in front of you and what you hear in front of you, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we are going to now assume that you have already played the game. And now we're basically going to talk about why we like it so much.
Right. So I guess we should just start with, like, the straightforward ending.
Yeah, freedom ending, as it's called on the wiki.
Yeah. So gameplay-wise, you know, what happens is Stanley starts the game in his office, and the narrator explains, like, Stanley found himself in his office and all his coworkers had vanished. And so he decided to go to his boss's office to find out why. And so, you know, you go through your office, there's a few twisty hallways, and then you come to the set of doors, the pair of doors. And these doors, it's just two doors, and the narrator says Stanley chose the door on his left. And the developers said that this is, like, what they started with, and every other decision they made was based around these doors.
Yeah, it is hard to make two doors iconic, especially in, like, a boring office setting like the Stanley Parable, but oh my god, just the room with two doors and the narrator insisting you go left is one of my favorite moments in all of video gaming. It is so immediately enrapturing and interesting. It is so, like, it immediately gets your brain thinking about, like, well, he just said that I did a thing, but I didn't.
Right.
So what if I don't?
Right. It's very, like, you can either go along with the narrator, which is what takes you to the freedom ending, or you can do, you know, whatever to spite the narrator, or to see what would happen. And that's the core of the Stanley Parable, is this idea of, like, the interaction with the narrator is a two-way relationship.
Yeah. So the freedom ending continues, where if you go through the left door, you go upstairs to the boss's office and see that your boss is not there either. You find a keypad, you input a code, and eventually you find your way downstairs to the mind control room, where it turns out that Stanley and all of the employees have actually been, like, constantly monitored, and it turns out being mind controlled. And so Stanley does the brave thing and turns off the machine.
And then a giant door opens.
It is a really fun moment. This is one minor change. The original game had a very, like, just source door open behind you. And it also had, like, a town square instead of a field. But the big dramatic, like, the big dramatic bunker door lowering is so... It
takes way too long.
It really does, especially when you're trying to do the speedrunning achievement.
But, like, I love it because it really draws out the whole reveal. And it just, it's one of those things where you keep thinking it'll end, and then the narrator just keeps going. Like, the path to the doorway slants downward before it reaches the door. So it looks like it's actually shorter than it is when you first approach it. There's sort of just that sort of, like, moment of, oh, wait, there's, like, twice the height of this door to go.
Yeah, it's a really clever little bit of, like, the design of the room and use of lighting. So this ending is the core irony of the entire game.
Yes.
This ending is the core ending of the, like, whole experience, and pretty much, I would argue, every other ending, aside from the gag endings, are about interrogating this relationship. Because, obviously, like, and this isn't groundbreaking to say, like, this isn't high-level anything. It's very obvious that, like, you just heard a tale of somebody who was apparently mind-controlled and, you know, finally shut down the mind control and set himself free, but all you've done the entire run is do what the narrator told you.
Right. And then when you step outside, it's like one of the only cutscenes in the game where you lose control of Stanley. So yeah. By reaching freedom, you actually are even more controlled than before by the narrator's words, essentially.
Yeah. One great change from the original is that the original didn't have anything to say until you left the door. Like, I think it stopped at basically the, you know, then suddenly a light behind him or something like that line. But, like, part of what's great about the long, drawn-out ramble from the narrator is that it's all this words of, like, you know, finally feeling free for the first time in his life. And it's just kind of belligerently hammering the point home of, like, yes, this is freedom. Doing what you're told is freedom.
Yeah. I think I love this because, like, if you were to take this as a standalone story, I don't think it's that interesting. Like, all his coworkers have vanished. He goes to his boss's office. His boss has vanished. He takes the secret elevator to the mind control facility, turns it off, leaves. But also, like, it doesn't actually answer why his coworkers have vanished. And yeah. It's very, very, like, blunt with its messaging, you know, oh, corporate wage slave is mind control. And so there's no, like, tact handled with that metaphor. And so, like, I can never help but think that the narrator is, like, not as good of a storyteller as he thinks he is.
Yeah, the game even makes a point at the very ending where, like, the narrator says, but there were so many, you know, loose ends. Where was his boss? Where was everybody? You know, and then he kind of says, like, but, you know, all these melted from Stanley's mind as he breathed in freedom.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this is what every other ending compares to, in the sense that this is like the mission statement of the game, that there is sort of this weird paradox of choice in games. It's like the narrator wants to railroad the player and railroad Stanley, and it's presenting all these choices, but the narrator says that only one set of choices is correct. And so that is sort of that's the main drive of the entire game as a whole. Every other ending is asking, like, are these choices really incorrect? Is the narrator full of it? Is this as valid an ending as that first freedom ending? It's very paradoxical in the sense that the narrator wants Stanley to follow the quote-unquote intended path, but for those paths to exist, they must have been intentional. The narrator says, like, it's meaningful to have choices, but the reason why choices are meaningful is because those outcomes are meaningful, in that the player is free to choose which choice they want. That's just, like, game design.
Yeah.
I think it was, I don't remember who said it, but there's a famous quote by a board game designer that's like, a game is a set of interesting decisions. And that is the sort of identity that Stanley Parable represents with itself. It's a set of interesting decisions, and the narrator does not agree with that statement, and that is where the friction comes in between the player and the narrator.
Yeah, I also quite like the meta read, and honestly a lot of my analysis is based on the meta read, that Stanley is the player, but like also the player controls Stanley, but Stanley is a more literal stand-in for the player. Like, if you rewire your brain a little bit, Stanley's job is to sit in an office, stare at a screen, and press buttons. That's the job of every video game player in existence. That is what every video game asks of you. And so my general read on the game has to do with a lot of the endings are interrogating the different ways in which the game designer and the player interact with each other to varying degrees of validity, hostility, and general player input. And the ultimate question asked is, like, what is the true relationship? What is a game but a miserable pile of choices?
What is the correct way to play a video game? And a lot of different endings will specifically point at different, like, methods of playing a game, or different, intentions of playing a game?
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, poke around at those. Let's see, so as far as the next ending, I think I want to go with the game's ending.
Yes, because the game's ending is very good.
Right, because we talked a lot about how Stanley Parable is itself a game about games, so we should talk about, I think, the most overtly game about games, which is the game's ending.
Yeah, the game's ending is one of the two you can get for basically doing everything wrong, basically going against everything the narrator asks of you.
Right. It is, you take the door on the right, you keep going down that path, you ride the platform but then fall off before it finishes moving, you go through the blue door multiple times, and then...
Actually, I do want to interject really quickly and say that you fall off onto a catwalk, you get like a little gag ending where you can fall off and literally die, which is funny, but like, you fall off onto a catwalk. The first time I ever experienced this, and like experienced everything I thought and then went to like YouTube, I never thought to walk onto that catwalk. I always took that as just like set dressing. It never crossed my mind. And that's part of why I love this game, is that sense of like, oh shit, you could do that?
Yeah. So, after you go through the catwalk, the narrator's like, you really don't want to make these choices, right? Well, I'll give you a very easy one, and it's a red and a blue door. If you keep going through the blue door, the narrator just says, well, clearly you don't want to play this game, so give me feedback on the game, and then I'll try out other ideas. So it's like a 1 through 5 scale. My favorite thing is, he was like, how would you rate your experience of this ending or whatever? And I hit 3, and the narrator was like, oh, how about next time you try having an opinion? So the first like change is that the narrator adds a fake leaderboard, like a Steam leaderboard. That's like, compete with your friends to get the most open doors.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And then after that, the narrator presents a new game called The Baby Game.
Well, you did skip one, which is that the very first change is actually that he adds a third door.
Oh, right.
Which is great. Also that the like Steam leaderboard scrolls down to show that you are in fact in very last place of everyone.
It has a lot of good fake usernames too.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like 9,000 of 9,000. But then, he creates his own like pure art game,
The Baby Game.
The Baby Game.
It is a baby that pretty quickly moves towards fire, and by baby I mean it's a cardboard cutout of a baby moving towards literal fire, and you have to press a big red button to make the baby go backwards to the start, and it's very loud, and the baby whines every time you press the button, and he says that you have to do it for 4 hours to really understand the game.
Yeah, it's it is as abrasive as it could be. And it's fun, and like anything, there is actually a secret ending if you do it for 4 hours, except at the 2 hour mark, the narrator comes back in and basically says, like, you know, you could have actually put it in like an auto click program to cheese this. So here's a puppy that is going to be lowered into like piranhas or something. So you have to manually, like, very desert bus, you have to manually like rapid click on the puppies to keep them out of the shredder or whatever, and then like move to the baby real quick to reset it. It's very funny.
Yeah.
And it's also the ending that I would say, do not attempt. Look it up. It's 4 hours. It's not worth it.
Yeah. Unless it's like a charity stream, like Desert Bus.
Yeah.
I would love to see Desert Baby charity stream. this is another example, I think, of the narrator being way too blunt and like tactless as a artist.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, he literally says, like, it's a compelling metaphor for childcare and being a parent. But to me, it's also just another test of, like, the player isn't going to put up with this, obviously. You know, doing something for 4 hours where it's just pressing an annoying button, that's not realistic. And I think it's just this very, very strong, like, oh, well, you're going to let this baby die, you know? Like, it's very obviously set up so that the player will want to kill the baby just to get on with it.
Yeah, it's very, like, tongue-in-cheek, ham-fisted. It reminds me of, like, the sort of indie game craze right after Limbo, where, like, every game had to be some kind of really heavy-handed, like, small child in a dark, scary place video game, you know?
Yeah. Which was then completely trounced with Inside. But that's indeed for another day. if you fail the baby game, the narrator's just like, fine, you don't want to play this game, we're going to play somebody else's game. And he plays Minecraft.
Yeah.
He opens up Minecraft, he builds a little house. The whole time you're unable to really do anything but walk around. You know, the narrator flexes his control over Minecraft. But my favorite thing is that he still makes a door and tells you to go through it. Because he's making a house in Minecraft, and then he puts a door in the front, and he's like, why don't you step inside this house, Stanley? And so he opens the door, and it's just like, even inside a different game, it's still fundamentally a game about going inside the door that the narrator tells you.
Again, this is why I love this game, because I never thought about that angle.
Yeah, I immediately thought of that.
That's so perfect.
He's then like, oh wait, we need to deck this place out with diamonds. All right, let's go mining. And then you enter the cave, and he's like, oh wait, this is too open-ended. We need to play something more linear. Let's see what we have on here. And then he opens Portal. And obviously the Portal gun does not exist. So he just, like, breaks open the wall in the holding cell you start the game in. What I love is that this is, like, the only time where you can actually pick up objects. And the objects in the holding cell act like they do in Portal. So you can break the coffee cup. You can put the clipboard in the toilet. You can do all the fun stuff.
All the classic Portal things.
Yeah. And you can try to solve the first puzzle, which is just putting a cube on the button. And he's just like, oh, critical thinking, Stanley. Your favorite. Your expertise.
And then you eventually, when you complete the puzzle, you can actually get yourself stuck there by wedging the cube, like, outside the door. And then you just have to restart. But when you don't do that, because you're a good player, you walk towards the elevator, and he preemptively closes it and is like, actually, you know what? No, I think I'm done with this. Farewell, Stanley. Enjoy whatever the hell you want to do.
Yeah, if you go into where the elevator was, you fall into this, like, unfinished area where it's like walls of the office, but they don't have all the, like, wallpaper and everything. It's almost entirely unlit. It's very dark. It's sort of like a weird, like, underworld depths of The Office.
Yeah. So, fun fact, this, the, like, what you find down there is the original Stanley Parable.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that is, like, the walls are the exact same walls and wall textures. The room that you eventually have to find is the original Stanley room of him, of what he pushed buttons on. Which, like, you can tell because it's all Half-Life 2 tech, which, you know, it was a source mod, so, like, you obviously use what you have. And I think this is also the ending that's talked about in, actually, a different ending of the trivia is that, like, the final voice line is the narrator saying, like, I wonder what he found in there. I hope it was fun. Well, you know, he'll need me again for the next run. I guess I'll just wait till that till whenever that is. I can wait. And then, you know, silence. And I think that's the ending that originally was supposed to never end until the player manually restarted.
Yeah. I was gonna say, what's really funny about this part, it reminds me a lot of Portal 2, which I don't remember if that came out by this point. Let me check.
2013? Yeah, 2011 was Portal 2.
Okay, yeah. It reminds me a lot of Portal 2, where you go underneath Aperture Science and find the old offices and the old test chambers. Yeah. This is like the same concept, where you go underneath Aperture Science and find the old Stanley Parable.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting little parallel.
Yeah. So the game's ending is a question where it's like, if the player refuses to engage with the game on its own terms, why aren't they playing a different game?
Yeah, it's this interesting dichotomy where, like, the narrator is obviously being a dick about it. The narrator is obviously like, you know, oh, well, you don't like this? All right, fine, I'll QA test it. Oh, you still don't like it? Well, let's just do something else. But at the same time, it does kind of interrogate that question of, like, you could just play another game. I think it's a very, like, I sort of interpret it as, like, the relationship between QA testers and devs, where it's, like, the players come in with their own specific expectations of a game, and when the game isn't like what they expect from other video games, they ask why it isn't like that other video games. But you can also, like, argue that you shouldn't be coming into a certain video game expecting it to be like every other video game. Random example off the top of my head, because it's walking simulators, Gone Home was kind of grew into infamy for being just a walking simulator, you know, at a time where, like, video games were supposed to have all gameplay and not be political and whatever. And here's Gone Home, a story that's a walking simulator about a woman who comes out as a lesbian. And it's like, hey, maybe we can use video games to tell other stories. You know, this isn't without precedent. There's things like Dear Esther. And it's like, maybe the ones who are wrong are the players, but also, is that always an acceptable option?
Right. So, with the Stanley Parable giving endings to all of these questions, or, like, making them significant parts of the game, it, in a way, validates that style of play. So, by giving an ending where you don't play the game by its own terms and you do everything else, it's saying that that is a valid way because it reaches an ending.
Yeah.
I think the question lies in something like, can you play a stealth game as a, like, run and gun? Or can you play something like a shooter like Call of Duty as a stealth game? Or, you know, can you play games in a way that is counterintuitive to the intended or perhaps the recommended play style? And this is an interesting question because a lot of people drive challenges out of those, you know, things like Swordless Link in the original Legend of Zelda, or like pacifist runs in games. Those are based off the idea that you're not playing the game by its own terms. You're doing the opposite of what it wants you to do. And I think this ending kind of asks the question of when is it okay to do that versus is it okay to do that? Because if you're playing like a platformer and you refuse to jump, I mean, maybe that's, I guess that's kind of like the A button challenge in Mario 64. But if you refuse to jump in a platformer, that's not the game's fault for like not facilitating that style of gameplay. That is just like a refusal to interact with the game. And so I think there is that tension, or that there's a line between outright refusal and like semi-refusal, or like subverting the game. Yeah. That is what this ending is talking about. And I think the next ending I want to talk about branches off of that, which is, I don't remember if it has a specific ending, but it's where you leave the window.
Yeah, the glitch ending. We'll just call it the glitch ending.
Sure, yeah. Basically, in the room outside of Stanley's office, there are two desks that are by a window. And you can climb on one of the chairs by that desk and then climb over to the other desk and then out the window. The windows are all around the office and they're all just like pitch white, like completely bright. There's no discernible features outside. And so this is the only window you can actually go through. And when you do that, the game has like a very quippy sort of response to it.
Yeah, the response is very like, I bet you thought this, but now that you're hearing this, I bet you're thinking, ah, now I'm thinking this. It's like, you know, ah, you probably thought this was unintentional, but then because you're hearing this, you know it is intentional.
Right.
But Stanley, now you're wondering.
Stanley pondered the cliches of modern game design and how they can be subverted.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's a very small ending, but I think what I like about it is, for one thing, it's one that's hard to discover accidentally. Like, you kind of have to intentionally think to yourself, can I leave one of these windows? And like, that's pretty powerful, because it's not just the narrator saying like, you can't go through that window, Stanley, and then you do it. It's one where the player themselves has to be in the mindset that the game wants to talk about. That mindset of breaking out of bounds.
Yeah, and another part that I like of it is that there's a quote-unquote choice where I think the narrator asks, like, please respond with your feedback, whether or not this has enhanced your gaming experience. Yes, no. And then you click on one of them, and he says, thank you for your feedback. Now you might be wondering, I wonder what would happen if I clicked the other button. But are you really going to sit through all of this dialogue just to see if there's something different? And I have, and I believe that there's nothing different. But one of my favorite little details is all of the non-choices, all of the red herrings in the game. So like one of my favorite direct examples is every time you reset, the narrator usually has a different opening line, and one of them is Stanley just knew that there was someone behind him, and if only he could turn around fast enough, he would finally catch a glimpse of them. That instantly triggers my paranoia. And it's like, the game is chock full of those like choices that the game has intentionally just not programmed in any consequences for, where like It uses the fact that this is a medium where a narrator is directly telling you something about the game to its own, like, humor, to get its own humor across, and its own... It works with the theme, but it's also just directly funny. Like how, in a future ending we'll talk about, there's a moment where there's, like, a fern, and the narrator specifically stops you and is like, oh, here, Stanley, this fern is going to be incredibly important for the story later. Make sure you study every detail of it. There is no reason to do this at all.
Yeah.
But it's just like, every time I have played it, I have stopped at that fern for a couple of seconds.
Mm-hmm. That's one where I can't help but, like, roleplay a bit.
Yeah.
I think the glitch ending is another example of the game, like, validating a form of play. In this case, the play style of finding glitches and abusing them.
Yeah.
You know, you see this a lot with people who are watching speedruns for the first time being like, oh, they use glitches, that's not fair. But I think this is an example where the game gives you a new ending for glitching the game, quote unquote, and it rewards that sort of the mindset of like, can I actually break out of bounds? And so again, it validates that playstyle in an interesting way.
Yeah. One ending, actually spinning off of that is kind of a glitch. It's a little up in the air whether or not it's like an abandoned ending or a real intentional one, and that's what makes it really interesting, is the escape pod ending.
Yes.
So the escape pod ending, when you go through the boss's doors, they close behind you, as every door does, but there's a brief window where you can get just inside the door, the boss's office, to trigger the door closing, but then immediately backpedal so that they close in your face, and then you can go back through the entire office.
And then back right next to Stanley's office is a new open door that leads to an escape pod bay, but it's up like 5 flights of stairs. So you have to just keep climbing upstairs.
This is one of the most latently horrifying endings. Not because of anything that happens, but because you're kind of constantly expecting something to happen. Is there a video essay on why Source games are just kind of inherently scary, like Source maps?
I don't know. That makes me think of like how a lot of people are doing PS1 horror games, or like games built around low poly styles. It's sort of an uncanny valley thing, right? That like, they have just enough lighting and atmosphere and like texture quality to be barely realistic, but not enough to actually be realistic.
Yeah.
I think it's also that games have primed people to expect things in these sorts of situations when it's like this dark facility, you know?
Yeah,
that's why The Witness gives me anxiety when I play it, even though I know there's no scares, because it just has atmosphere.
Yeah,
and I'm expecting something.
It's the quiet. It's like a quiet hum of a video game. Like,
right.
It's not even that there is ambiance in a game, and there are like, you know, sound effects, but there's just something very, very like technologically empty, of like an empty source map that's just kind of, there should be something here and there isn't, and that's what makes it so terrifying.
Well, I can tell you what should be there and isn't. It's the narrator.
Yeah.
If you do this, the narrator, you cut off the narrator very quickly. It's like he says stepping into, but if you go back out, he just says step, you know, and then he doesn't talk at all for the rest of the run. Not even to acknowledge that you found the escape pod door or whatever. So it feels like the narrator is gone just suddenly, and you're like suddenly alone. You know, the one person who was with Stanley is now gone.
Yeah.
I believe, so every time you go up the stairs, you see a window into an office room, and I think it's the same office room every time. Like, it has the same numbers on the cubicles.
Yeah.
So there's this like sort of repeatingness aspect to it.
Yeah. God, that's not even one. This isn't even one of the endings where we can talk about like the Escherian, the Escherian construct of the office itself.
Yeah. Can we start saying Escherian instead of non-Euclidean?
Yes, please.
Except when it's actual non-Euclidean, like hyperbolic geometry. Shoutouts to Hyper Rogue. So when you get to the top, it's just like this dark room with a little lighted up patch at the end. And when you reach it, the game just kind of resets. You know, there's no like fanfare or anything.
Yeah, it resets notably a little bit before you like step into it, too.
Right.
I think that like one of the walls has like a, you know, scrawl of like caution or whatever, and I think that it specifically says that both player and narrator need to be present for the escape sequence to initiate. So like
I was gonna say, this is like a form of contention with some fans still, is whether or not there is a way for the narrator and player to be present at the same time. I think this is one where I personally don't think that it was supposed to be possible. I think it's just a joke that you can never have the narrator there, and so it will always fail. You know, it's like, oh, maybe you can reach true escape without a cutscene to be like, oh, Stanley's free, but you never can. Very Sisyphean.
Yeah. It feels kind of like they noticed that you could do this little trick, and instead of coding around it, they were like, oh, we have these assets from a different ending we planned. Let's just shove it here.
Right.
This would be a cute little thing.
In a way, to me, the unfinished part of it fits with the fact that the narrator's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like you're doing something you're not supposed to, and it catches you at the last second.
Yeah.
I do want to say, this is one that I would not have known about had I not seen it in a video.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, I've definitely tried going backwards through most of the doors in the game, and the only thing that I found has a similar, like, glitch to it, or not glitch, but a similar, like, outcome, is the moving platform. Because if you step on it and then leave, the narrator's like, well, Stanley, that moving platform is gone forever. I hope you feel powerful now.
Yeah.
So, escape pod ending. Interesting. Let's see, what's the next ending to talk about?
I suppose we can get another gag ending out of the way. The heaven ending.
Oh, yeah.
So every once in a while during one of the runs, you'll notice that one of the computers in the office area has a little note saying awaiting input. And if you click on it, then it will like strike. It will count one effectively. And it's like, thanks for your input. If you do it 5 times, then the computer in Stanley's room will have that same thing of awaiting input, which then if you click on that, will take you to heaven. And heaven.
Heaven's just a bunch of buttons.
Yeah. It's just a giant, like, rotating thing of colorful buttons.
Yeah. And you can click on them.
Oh, man.
It's sort of funny to say, like, heaven is just a bunch of button presses that do different things, but they're pretty much the same thing. It's another very tongue-in-cheek, like the same way that Stanley's job is just to push buttons, heaven isn't like a break from that, it's just more buttons, and they're colorful.
It works well on a narrative level, because, you know, Stanley loves his job of just pushing buttons, but also on the meta level, it's just like, well, here's what you asked for. More buttons.
Yeah. You want fun? Stanley give you fun. So that's a pretty fun one. It's another one where I wouldn't have known about it had I not seen it.
Yeah. I definitely noticed the like awaiting input. I don't think I ever would have noticed Stanley's computer at the end of it, though.
Right. I didn't realize you could interact with things outside of the keypad for the longest time. Which is why I also don't think I would have known about it had you not told me about this next ending, which is the broom closet ending.
Oh, man. I just can't stop talking about the broom closet ending.
Did you get the broom closet ending? The broom closet ending was my favorite, XD.
Oh, yeah. Even if you aren't hard of hearing, turn on subtitles. There's a lot of fun little Easter eggs thrown in there.
Yeah. So broom closet ending, there's a broom closet on the way to the boss's office. You can open it, you can step inside. And this is another great joke and another great view of like what's valid in gameplay. It's just a very small closet. There's not really anything to do in there. There's like a ladder, there's some like tools on a shelf, but nothing substantial. And if you stay in there, the narrator will be like, you know, I don't understand why this was so interesting to you. please leave the broom closet so we can get on with the story. And it just kind of keeps going. And then eventually the narrator's like, if the person at the computer has died, please have their body medically examined. And then have that examiner start playing the game.
Yeah.
And if you're playing it now, please leave the broom closet. And then you can leave and go back in.
Yeah.
And, you know, then more stuff happens. And then he's like, all right, this isn't funny. Just leave the broom closet. And if you leave and go back in, he resets the game and boards up the broom closet.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I love it. It's, you know, you're not moving anywhere, but you're also not really going, like, you're doing nothing, but like, what if you were just like off the computer doing something else, you know? The the broom closet,
it's the most entertaining idle game that I've ever played.
Literally idle. The broom closet ending to me is sort of a question of like, is it okay if the player literally just kind of hangs out during the game? Does the player have to keep moving? There are games I've played where I've liked to just kind of sit around in a place because it was so, like, meaningful or, like, pleasant in a way.
Yeah.
Recently, a good example was in the Final Fantasy VII remake. The area around Aerith's house was really beautiful looking. And it had like this little creek going through, and it was had some very pleasant greenery. And so I just kind of spent a few minutes there because it was really nice.
Yeah.
The broom closet ending isn't nice per se. It is a change of scenery because it's very brown instead of tan and yellowish. But I think it's still something different.
Yeah. My favorite little part of the broom closet ending is the fact that, like, the narrator even specifically points out, I didn't even mention the broom closet. If I had said Stanley walks past the broom closet, then, you know, I could understand this. But, like, I just assumed that you wouldn't care about it.
Yeah. It's another place where it exists, and so it means that it exists on purpose, though.
Yeah. It exists on purpose, and I think the meta meeting is kind of like the sort of like things that the dev literally never would have thought about, you know, the how do you account for something that like no one could expect? And like, obviously, in this case, the developers literally put it there and literally coded the entire broom closet ending in.
Yeah.
But like, from the meta narrative of like the narrator as a developer, it's a question of like, how do you account for something that not only is going against what you've said, but like is also just something that you never intended to even be there.
Yeah. I really quickly want to mention two things that are not endings, but they are unique rooms. These are the executive bathroom and the elevator. These are both kind of branches off the boss's office, and they don't lead anywhere. The executive bathroom is a bathroom. It's the only bathroom in the game, I'm pretty sure. And then the elevator doesn't go anywhere. You just enter it, you press the button to close the door, and then elevator music starts playing. And then when you press the button to open the door, it stops, but it puts you back in the boss's office, no matter like how long you wait or anything.
Yeah.
Those are just small features that are pretty fun. They don't, like I said, they don't lead anywhere, but they're almost extensions of the broom closet ending in that, like, there's no harm in just kind of sitting around there and taking it all in.
Yeah. They're an inherently fun place to just sort of be for a little bit.
Yeah.
So back to the quote unquote real endings. I say quote unquote because, I mean, you know, part of the whole deal is what is a real ending.
Yeah. I guess let's go with the confusion ending.
Oh, the confusion ending.
I think this is my favorite, and not the broom closet ending. Sorry.
Sorry for having lied.
So, confusion ending. Let's see. I don't remember how you actually reach it from the start. Is it you go through one of the red doors?
You have to go through the right door, and then if you go through the right door, you take a detour, and then you have the opportunity to go back to the right, to the left door path. If you go through the left door path, there's a lift that will take you down. Right. And that lift is how you start the confusion ending.
Right. It starts with the narrator forgetting where you are. And so, like, he'll be like, oh, actually, you're supposed to go through the right door. Wait, nope, left door. Sorry, I was mistaken. Eventually, it takes you to a creepy Resident Evil house.
Yeah.
Which is another example of the game playing at, like, horror tropes. The narrator even says, like, this house is giving me bad vibes.
Well, before that, it takes you through a... Like, before that, he, like, resets the game and then takes you to the, takes you to the doors again, except now there's, like, six of them.
Right. I thought that was after the Resident Evil house, but I could be wrong.
No, the Resident Evil house is, pretty late in.
Okay. So, yeah, there's, like, six doors, and they all lead to just a mess of hallways. Have you seen it right now? Google the back rooms, just the image of the back rooms. That is the office and specifically this part of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So now that you've Googled that, yeah, it's like you get lost and I believe he resets the game again, but he gives you a line, trademark.
Yeah, it's the Stanley Parable adventure line.
Trademark.
Trademark.
It has trademarks every time it says the line in the subtitles, but also whenever it refers to it with, like, it has trademark.
Yeah.
So, the line is supposed to be its own guide, and you pretty much have to follow it to actually progress the story. You know, it takes you all over the place. Eventually, it starts, like, going up the walls and going through the roof. It starts to really introduce these, like, Escherian spaces.
Yeah.
You know, there's a part where it's, like, filing cabinets that are really close to each other, and then it goes down this really long hallway that takes you just to the other side of the filing cabinet room. It messes with space in that way.
Yeah.
It kind of goes all around the place. And eventually it starts, like, splitting off in different directions, and the line just stops helping Stanley. And the narrator is like, all right, forget the line. We'll make our own adventure. Let's not go where the line tells us to. At some point, there's the Resident Evil house. Eventually, they get to, like, a circular room where without the line.
Yeah.
And the narrator's like, Stanley, I'll try to figure out where we are. Just walk in a circle, putting arrows on the floor. The narrator goes through this, like, weird, like
Iocane is from Australia sort of ramble.
Yeah. He opens one of the two doors on the circular room, and then it turns out they both go to the same room, which is a big screen that shows the schedule of the confusion ending, which reveals the narrator has to reset, like, five more times. And so this one is super interesting to me. For one thing, the line is the source of a lot of good jokes. It has all this, like, Escherian geometry, but also this puts the narrator on the same side as Stanley, and it puts the narrator in Stanley's shoes, because the narrator is presented with the line, which is its own narrator telling the narrator where to go. And then also the narrator sees the schedule, and he rebels at that. He's like, I don't want to have to follow a schedule that was set for me already. You know, I don't want to make the decision it wants me to.
Yeah.
So it's very ironic in a way, in more of a literal way, that the narrator is being told what to do as much as Stanley is. And so it's almost cathartic to hear the narrator lash out about the system telling him what to do. The irony is, of course, lost on the narrator. But it's interesting because it's like the narrator wants to railroad Stanley, but gives choices anyways, Whereas the line only, like, the line doesn't give choices so much as it ignores everything else. You kind of have to follow the line at some points. And so the line is like a less benevolent version of the narrator.
Yeah, it's very, like, lawful neutral.
Yeah. And so it feels to me like this example of, like, you know, this is what real railroading is like. But likewise, I think it's weird. You if you follow the line all the way through at one point, I think it just loops back to where the line is. So you do have to go off the beaten path to do so. And so to me, it always felt like sort of this commentary of, like, it's okay to not follow the story in a game. It's okay to, like, detour. Sometimes that's what you do to get, like, a nice ending or to, you know, get value out of it. And it's the ending where the narrator is the most okay with detouring. And so it's the one that encourages you to go off the beaten path. And so in that sort of meta sense of, like, examining different play styles of video games, this is that.
Yeah, it's I think it blends kind of well into my favorite ending, which is the museum ending, because it is probably the funniest ending, the confusion ending. But, like, the way at the very end that it sort of subverts its own rules in having the narrator himself be the one to kind of initiate the, like, no, I'm not going to play this game. It's a little bit sad. It's just a little bit sad. Yeah. And that, like, when you see the museum ending, it really punctuates that. So the museum ending is right before the big mind control room. There's a hallway that says escape. And if you go all the way down it, then the narrator traps you in this, like, just this, like, really small area, and sort of start moving towards a big giant crusher. And the narrator is basically like, well, Stanley, you could have had a good story, but you decided to try and escape on your own terms, so I'm going to kill you. And you keep crawling forward and crawling forward, and then right before they crush you, a female narrator comes in and says, and, like, basically starts narrating the narrator.
Right.
And the female voice effectively, I mean, I won't say the best line in the game, but, like, one of the most, like, kind of, like, hits you lines is the where she explains sort of, you know, but what the narrator fails to realize is that himself and Stanley are in the same charade. Himself and Stanley, like, he requires Stanley just as much as Stanley requires him. Don't you see? Stanley was always dead from the beginning. And, like, I think that plays into the ending of the confusion ending very well, where, like, at the end of the confusion ending, the narrator is sort of like, oh, hey, wait, did we stop it? Because it, like, shuts down the screen and, you know, things get a little dark and it's like, hang on, did we break the loop? Is everything cool? And then this really loud jump scare buzzer, like, cuts him off and hard reset the game, and you're no longer in the confusion ending. So, like, the game itself is sort of rejecting either of you stepping out of line, in a sense.
Right.
Like, when you step out of line, the narrator is the one to chastise you, but when the narrator steps out of line, the game chastises the narrator.
Yeah. So, it's sort of like, in a way, the player needs the designers for, like, guidance, or at least for entertainment, but likewise, the designers need players to play the game to get their message heard.
Yeah.
And so, there's this, this is, like, I think one of the biggest mission statements, or, like, you know, thesis statements, is that the ways that a player plays the game are influenced by the designer, but also, like, the way that the designer's work is meaningful to some extent, not entirely though, is for people to play the game. And so there is this very important balance of, like, making the player do what you want them to, and also letting the player know how they're supposed to interact with the game, and the player, it's on them to respect that intention while also being able to break out of that intention. So in you know, in criticism, there's the idea of authorial intent, you know, things like what did the author intend for this, and how is that intention represented by the text? You know, how well did they actually do what they set out to do? Something I feel like is important in game criticism, which I don't think is brought up often enough, is what I call player intent, which is what was the player's intention while playing the game? And how does that relate to the game itself or their experience? Because if a player wants to do what the game doesn't want them to do, and the game punishes them for that, then that's different than the game punishing the player for doing what the game wanted them to do. And I think it when you're talking about games, it requires a very sort of out-of-body judgment of what were you doing versus what the game tell you to do. How did those clash? How did that create the outcome that you experienced? So, like, if a game has a lot of bugs, how many of those were bugs that you encountered accidentally versus intentionally? And so I think this is a great sort of way to explain that, is that they need each other, that an experience of the game is a clash of both the player intent and the designer's intent, and you can't have a game with just one. You can't,
yeah.
You can't have a judgment of a game with just one, because as long as it is a video game, the player's intent is brought into play. You can't have a video game that only has the author's intent.
Yeah. The, like, author intent is actually one of the big reasons that I like this ending too, as well, because the museum ending is a literal museum. She drops you from your platform and you walk to the right. And then after she has her next voice line, it's a giant virtual museum of just, like, it's kind of basically the cutting room floor, but in game.
Right. It has a lot of, like, unused assets, unused endings, but it also has things that are in the game. Like, there's a model of the office, but then it also shows, like, the how the design of that office changed over time.
Yeah.
Notably with the utility passage between the right and left side.
Yeah. It's interesting because I am someone who really, really likes seeing behind the curtain of video games. And I also really, really like studying exactly what you mentioned of, like, the authorial intent versus the player intent. I really like seeing how they can harmonize, but also how they can disconnect. And I think the museum ending is my favorite just because it gives you a very direct view. And in kind of having this, like, third party come in, it makes it feel authentic. Like, I don't think that anything in the museum is, like, just put in there as a gag or, like, just put in there and is false information. I believe every word written is, like, explaining actually the author's intent. And, like, I wouldn't normally, like, you know, normally with the Stanley Parable, I wouldn't want to do that. I would want to constantly question it. But, like, the way that it gets so directly meta as to just kind of completely shatter the facade is so, like, integral to what makes it interesting. And what makes it even more interesting is the very ending of that, where once you sort of turn off the Stanley Parable, quote unquote, the female narrator is, it hard cuts you back to the Crushers, and the female narrator is basically begging you, like, you can still save both of them if you just quit the game. And I think that's the moment where she, like, clicked to me as an unreliable narrator herself, because if she is correct in that Stanley was dead before he even started, then that would mean that the only winning move is to not play a video game, because you're inevitably going to kind of break it. And that just doesn't seem correct.
Yeah, it makes me think of, like, if the only way to save them is to quit playing the game, but, like, you could just reset as well. And it feels like, so the narrator in this case, the female narrator, like, she's trying to be empathic towards Stanley and in the other narrator, just, you know, being like, they're locked in an endless struggle. But at the same time, like, closing the game doesn't help because the game still exists. Like, they still are part of the game. And as long as anybody opens the game, they'll be in that struggle. And they can't escape it because they are parts of the game. So, like, closing the game removes you from the game, but it doesn't remove what the game is, nor does it remove the events of the game.
Yeah. And also, I would just like to specifically put in a quick shout out to Undertale, the only game that has done the winning move is to not play the game ending correctly.
I still need to play Spec Ops.
Oh, yeah. Spec Ops is fine.
So
it's important anyway.
Yeah. This is getting pretty long, so I want to just quickly go through a few more.
Yes.
The apartment ending is very intentionally creepy. It has a jump scare. And that's probably the most creepy the game outright gets, like, on purpose. Yeah. It's also very spiteful of Stanley.
Yeah, so I do want to quickly mention as well, the original game, the original mod, the opening narration was, like, the narrator saying something to the effect of, like, Stanley was, you know, Stanley was kind of dumb and didn't really ever question his job of just pressing buttons until today. And I'm very glad that the remake kind of like, it didn't do the cynicism until you directly poke it and make it do cynicism in spite. Because, like, I think if it had just come out with that immediately, and, like, obviously the reading is Stanley is player, but in a more literal sense, then it would seem very cynical. And I think all of the various endings are basically their own individual takes. And some of them have to be cynical, because if it's exploring all the takes of the relationship between narrator and player, then, like, yeah, sometimes they're going to be so combative that you just have to have one of them be the bad guy. But, like, coming at it from the very beginning has that kind of air of, like, you know, fuck you for playing this game.
Yeah.
That I think doesn't mesh well with this kind of exploration of meta.
The dream ending is really weird and esoteric. It sort of is like, this was all in Stanley's head. It's fine. I am not as fan of it, but it's like, there's so much else in the game that's good that it's hard to, you know, always keep that level of quality. It has more Escherian geometry, which it's kind of fun to just kind of walk through it.
Yeah.
It's very much like, what is reality? What is time? What is space? I don't know. I just feel like the like, it was all in Stanley's head isn't the best thing.
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to parse, like, narratively, and it's also kind of got the weakest beats, because, like, the ending of that one is that, like, this random woman named Mariella sees Stanley, who collapses on the sidewalk, and she kind of has these thoughts of, like, you know, wow, I'm glad I'm not a crazy person. I'm a rational person who is in control of myself and am real. And it's a little bit, like, very on the nose of the whole, like, you are a fake character in a video game, haha, bit. It's probably the weakest ending.
It feels like it's trying to be, like, Stanley is self-aware, or, like, the narrator is writing Stanley to be self-aware. But, yeah, it's like, whereas all the others put Stanley as a player stand-in, this is the one where it's most directly, like, Stanley realizes he's in a video game.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's performed as well as the other endings.
Yeah.
The Zending is really uncomfortable.
Yes.
I don't know how I was able to actually finish it. I really wish I didn't. It's it has some incredible delivery by the narrator. Don't get me wrong, like, it has some great voice acting, but it is very hard to play through because of that.
Yeah, it's if you go through the actual red door when he asks you to, then you like get taken to this room that's like pretty colors and space, and it's very nice, and it is a little funny where he's like, wow, I feel happiness for the first time. Except then you can go downstairs to a different room where there's just a fairly long set of stairs and a ledge, and you jump up, and he kind of is like, no, Stanley, don't do this. And you can jump off, and he genuinely screams no, and you hit the ground, and he's like, oh, I thought you would have died. Okay, let's go back to the happy room. And the realization that you have to do this multiple times is
heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's more heartbreaking than the entirety of The Last of Us Part 2.
Whereas every other ending is like, it's okay to do something other than what the narrator wants. This is the one that the most makes you emphasize with the narrator and makes it the most uncomfortable to go against the narrator.
Yeah, it's the exact like opposite coin head of the apartment ending, where the apartment ending is the most that the narrator is antagonistic towards Stanley and you, the player. The Zending is the one that absolutely is the player being the most antagonistic towards the narrator.
Yeah. And it's still sort of an examination of player intent, in that it's like, is it really worth like hurting the developer in this way? Is it really worth like going against the developer's wishes, even if it's just not at all fun? It reminds me of something in Undertale, you know, shouts out to Undertale again, where it's like, you know, is it worth seeing what would happen if you go through this game a different way? Is that actually worthwhile to you as a player, or is it just because you want to see everything to completion?
Yeah.
I think we've covered most of the endings now. I'm trying to think. There's one I know we haven't covered that I do want to mention.
Yeah. Is that the real person?
No. But do that one.
So the real person ending, if you do the apartment ending, then you have a telephone. But if you unplug that telephone, then the narrator is kind of like, wait, you just made an incorrect choice. You specifically aren't supposed to do that. Oh, I get it. You're not Stanley. You're a real person. You get a hilarious little instructional video on how to properly make choices. If you can, like, if you haven't seen this ending, at least look that part up or find it, because it's beautiful. But then, like, the game starts kind of collapsing around you, and the very ending is the second saddest, I would say, that the narrator is, because, like, the very ending is that you are standing above the iconic room, and Stanley's model is just standing there looking at the
Stanley
two doors.
Is a model? Good for him.
Yeah. He's in Polygon Monthly. But Stanley's just looking at the two doors, doesn't move at all because you're not controlling Stanley. And like the narrator gets really sad after a while, where it's like, you know, Stanley, like, are you okay, bud? Like, you know, you need to make a choice. If you don't make a choice, then we can't continue the story, and you know, what am I here for if not to tell you a story? And it's like, it's a very direct plea of like, I made this for you and I am not complete without you.
Yeah. And in a way, unplugging the phone is like unplugging the game, you know?
Yeah.
It's saying, I want to turn this off. So, that reminds me, there is one thing I forgot to mention a long time ago, which is on the way to the boss's office, there is a meeting room with a projector in a slideshow, and just watch the slideshow all the way through. It's very funny.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like corporate humor, but not like Dilbert corporate humor. I mean like good corporate humor.
Yeah,
there's surrealist humor.
A lot of the background gags are like really top notch.
Also, look in the Steam achievements. This is what something the game is most famous for. There's one called Go Outside, which is what, don't play the game for 5 years?
Yep.
Do you have that one?
I just got it yesterday when I played this game for this podcast.
Nice. I just got the game a few days ago, so I definitely don't have it.
Yep, see you in 2026.
Yep. So, like, all that aside, there is one more ending I want to bring up, which is the countdown ending. This is if you go to the mind control device that from the freedom ending and you turn it on instead of turning it off. And the narrator's like, you idiot, why would you do that? And so it starts like this self-destruct countdown. And, or no, it's a countdown for the mind control device to come back on. And you have to turn it off manually by pressing all these buttons in the room before, which has just a bunch of buttons.
Yeah.
And there's a big timer counting down. But if you take too long, the narrator will add time onto the timer. It reminds me, and this is one where it's super, super pessimistic towards Stanley. The narrator's like, you're all your coworkers, they never existed. I made them up. I lied to you. and so it's like a boss battle. Specifically, it's like the GLaDOS boss battle. And here is sort of it might be a bit of a stretch. It might be a bit of a digital media hypothesizing, but I really want to bring this up. So if you look at first person puzzle games, they like to have unreliable narrators ever since Portal. Portal was pretty big, you know, fairly big. It was a really popular puzzle game that reached a huge audience beyond just puzzle games. And there's a lot of reasons why. It's pretty simple puzzle wise. It doesn't have a lot of like difficult logic. Once you understand how portals work, it's straightforward. It has a like adventure game style, but importantly, it has GLaDOS, a villain that is also pretty funny at times. That's very sarcastic. It very fit with the like the world of the time.
Yeah.
But since then, if you look at a lot of puzzle games, especially first person puzzle games, things like Talos Principle or the Turing Test or Cube with Q-U-B-E, these are all games that have unreliable narrators that are like either helping you through or like, you know, talking to you during it. And it's interesting to me that the Stanley Parable exists in this ecosystem, because most games with these sort of unreliable narrators do it for plot reasons, like, oh, the person who said they were helping you is actually evil the whole time, or they're not who they seem. And also it's because it's like GLaDOS, it's, you know, it makes sense either marketing wise or inspiration wise. But the narrator in Stanley Parable feels like one of the few that is trying to do something interesting with it, is trying to like really say something about the role narrators have, specifically unreliable narrators. And this boss battle to me is interesting because it's, like I said, it's similar to GLaDOS. It's a big round room with like something in the middle, like a pit. You have to go all around the place and press buttons and do things. And the whole time the narrator's being antagonistic towards you. But like in a way, it doesn't feel antagonistic. Like the narrator isn't doing anything to harm you. The narrator is just, and he adds time to the timer. So it's very obviously a fight you're meant to win. And I don't know, it always struck out to me because like it reminded me so much of Portal and how that had this boss fight that was kind of out of nowhere at the end of a puzzle game that doesn't normally have boss fights, like the genre. And this is like a walking simulator that suddenly has a boss fight out of nowhere, which is a genre that doesn't normally have boss fights.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it's a commentary on the entire like puzzle game sphere as a whole, but it really felt to me like they were going for that same concept.
Yeah.
And I think, so my favorite book of all time is House of Leaves, which has multiple unreliable narrators, but it does so thematically to ask questions about the nature of authorship in books and like what it means for something to be in the first person perspective versus a third person perspective. And to me, Stanley Parable feels very similar, where it's not just using the narrator to say, like, I am antagonizing you, because the narrator does exist to encourage the player to do something else. You know, because the narrator says, go through the door on your left, there's like this very big urge to go through the other door to spite them. But at the same time, the narrator says something interesting about, like, you know, the developer side, authorship, or what does it mean to tell the player to do something? And it's funny to me that to actually activate this choice where you fight the narrator, you have to do everything right except the very last choice he makes you do.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to say.
That's fair. I'm trying to think of anything that can kind of tie it up as well. Yeah, so I think that's a good place to end our discussion of the Stanley Parable for now.
What? Oh yeah,
mid review term. We're not shut up and sit down. So the Stanley Parable was released in 2013, the HD standalone remake. However, there is a Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe Edition that is currently still being made. It was supposed to be released in 2019, then 2020. Then 2021 for understandable reasons. It's apparently basically a upgraded expansion again, and is, according to the creators, going to be the last like time they do the Stanley Parable.
I believe they also remade the game in Dreams.
That sounds like something they would do. Also, side note, if you don't have the money, play the demo. The demo is its own standalone thing, and it's great.
Yeah.
I
think that's about it.
Yeah, pretty much. Small little other things, I guess. David Reedon did make another game called The Beginner's Guide that is honestly worth its own examination. It's very good. William Pugh made... it was something like Dr. Stanislavski, the Lion and the Diamond, or something like that. It's a very long name.
That's the Crows, Crows, Crows game, isn't it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Did
he also work on Accounting?
He might have. I would not be surprised.
Okay.
Accounting, the VR game from,
Crows, Crows, Crows.
Justin Roiland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, That is pretty much all we have to say. I know it was a lot, but this is kind of a seminal game. When I talk about video game like structure and meta commentary and stuff like that with some of my other friends, I have said before, we are living in a post Stanley Parable world.
Right.
Like, the way that this game interrogates meta and the relationship between player and game and player and director, it's very unique, and it's very one of a kind. That's the same thing twice.
That's not unique. I love this game. It is a great example of something you can only do in the medium, which is always a treat.
Yeah.
Tweet. So thank you for listening. You can follow us on social media at NetSurferPro on Facebook and Twitter. You can get updates to when we get episodes and see little teasers for the episodes through there. You can also, you know, listen to us on any podcasting platform you use. Give us a like, give us a review. Every little bit of engagement helps spread the podcast. You know, recommend it to people. We don't have any sort of advertising in place because this is only our 10th episode or so.
Yes, please. Please do contact us if you would like us to plug any sponsorships. That'd be fun.
Yes. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. You can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Monday, Wednesday, Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. I recently played through all of the Hitman World of Assassination trilogy, which is fantastic. Great game. I'll probably stream Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe whenever that comes out.
Yeah.
You can follow me on YouTube at youtube.com/IEatAtSonic. IEATATSONIC. I make video essays, reviews. I recently uploaded a highlight video of my first Hitman 3 stream of the first level in that game, so you can kind of get a feel of what it's like by checking that out. And I think that about does it for me plugs.
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Galen Wilson. Wilson has a zero, so it's GalenWilson0. I have all kinds of hot takes that you can enjoy. You can also follow me on, I don't know, I'll just give out my Discord tag. Why not? My Discord tag is Jack #4243. JAK #4243. And with that, those are the only two plugs I want to plug right now. Me and Matt have to have a conversation about maybe doing Undertale for our 100th episode special.
See you later.
Buh-bye.